Hines. And here is your host, Gary Cacciolio.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Everything Imaginable. I am your host, Gary Cacciolillo. And before we get started, I want to thank everybody for listening and also thank the contributors to this show, who are Candace Sanderson, author of The Reluctant Messenger, Ms. Aida, author, psychic, spellcaster, root worker, and witch. And you can find her at MsAida.com, MissAida. Also, Ginger Glasser. She's a tarot reader, evidential medium, and psychic and healer. And you can find her at tarotbyginger.com. And also Alan Questel. And you can find Alan at uncommonsensing.com. And you can also find his book on Amazon, which is called Intentional Acts of Kindness. And I totally recommend it because the world can always use more kindness. And now, without further ado, our guest for today is James Shubsky. And he is from the Columbia River Gordon, Washington State. And he has an outdoor shop and tour guide up there. And it's a very interesting spot. Thanks for coming
on. Thank
you
for having me. Yeah, my pleasure.
So how long have you been living up there?
Well, I've been in Washington State since 1988. Came out here with the military. And about 3 years ago, my mother-in-law passed away. And she had several businesses in the Columbia River Gorge, a little town called Bingen on the Washington side. It's about an hour east of Portland. And so when she passed away, my wife and I decided to carry on the family businesses. And one of them was a store that kind of needed some work. I have a lot of outdoor adventure experience. So I was a decorated infantry soldier with the U.S. Army. A wildland forest firefighter, search and rescue EMT, and several other things. And so with that experience, I knew that I could do a pretty good job with an outdoor store. It wasn't long after we opened the store that folks started coming in and spontaneously telling us stories about the unusual encounters they were having in the wilderness areas of the Columbia River Gorge. Mostly Sasquatch stories and UFO stories, things like that. I was fascinated. And so having had a little bit of experience with this kind of stuff and knowing that oftentimes there's some meat on the bones of these stories, we put up a big sign in the window and it said, file your paranormal reports here. And I didn't know what we were going to get, but here we are. We're about a little over two years into the program and we've had nearly 300 paranormal reports at that time. Everything from Sasquatch, UFOs, glowing orbs, ghosts, a really interesting set of stories related to a creature we call the Klickitat ape cat. So the store is located in Klickitat County, and that derives its name from the original people that lived here. And we've had senior law enforcement officials, all kinds of folks, report seeing an enormous black panther-like creature.
I just saw that on one of those shows, it was either like The Unexplained or one of those shows on History Channel recently. I saw that story. Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
Well, I think that our story might be a little different. The thing that makes this one unique.
The story about the cat.
Yeah. So the first report that I ever received, the gentleman who came in and reported it, he described this creature, and he said it had a face that looked like a monkey. And so in that time, you know, we've had, like I said, close to 90 reports of this creature. About half of those folks, so everyone describes this big muscular cat with a long black tail, black fur, but half of those folks say that it's enormous in size. So we often get reports of it being 4 to 5 feet tall at the shoulder. And so about half of the reports describe that enormous size. And then a handful of reports say that it has primate-like features on its face. So it's a big mystery. We don't know exactly what it is that people are encountering out here. There is some supernatural explanations. Up river from us, there is the Hanford nuclear site, which was a part of the Manhattan Project all the way back in the 1940s. And surprisingly, when you look at the historical record, the most reasonable and rational explanation is that it escaped from the Department of Energy secret labs where they were doing animal experimentation up there. And so we can get into all that as we talk about the incredible amount of paranormal reports that we get here in the Columbia River Gorge. I know that while we've had close to 300 reports, we're really just scratching the surface. Mm-hmm. And the place has got a long, long history of being a paranormal hotspot.
Interesting. So what do you think makes it a paranormal hotspot? Is it like, you think it's related to like the ley lines and things like that? Or do you think or some type of magnetic anomaly? Because usually like that's the big thing. You know, like people will say it's a magnetic anomaly causing a vortex, which is creating all the phenomena to come in and out. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
Well, the gorge has got some of the most unique geology in the world. And before I get into, you know, this is a story that spans millions of years. But before I get into it, I'll give you just a brief description for your listeners to get a sense of the kind of place we're talking about. So the Columbia River is the largest river in North or South America that flows into the Pacific Ocean. It is, it passes directly through the Cascade Mountains, and it is the only sea level passage through those mountains. So that's sort of a mountain range that extends from British Columbia all throughout Washington State, all throughout Oregon State, and then sort of ends in Northern California. The gorge itself is about 80 miles long, and it is so jaw-droppingly beautiful here that back in the 80s, the U.S. Congress created a special law just to protect it, and the gorge became the country's first national scenic area. Basically, it affords us many of the protections that you'd get from being a national park, but people are allowed to live here, own businesses here, you know, and carry on, conduct their lives here. And what makes this place so beautiful is that you can go from basically sea level where the river is, and in less than half of a mile, be at 3,000 feet. The gorge has got these stunning cliffs that are layered, and there is the largest concentration of waterfalls anywhere in the United States here. There are over 90 named waterfalls on the Oregon side alone. So the Columbia River forms the border between Washington and Oregon. On top of that, since we're in the mountains, within 35 miles of my store, there are three glacier-clad stratovolcanoes. And so there's Mount Hood, Mount Adams, and Mount St. Helens. And if you can get yourself to a high point, you see that you're just in this vast ocean of trees, these enormous forests that span as far as the eye can see. And like, you know, these icebergs coming out of this turbulent sea are these gleamingly beautiful mountains that are over 10,000 feet tall. Mount St. Helens famously erupted in 1980. Mount Adams is has been a UFO hotspot for decades and decades. Right. And then Mount Hood is considered a Sasquatch hotspot. And so with all that volcanic activity, there were over 600 caves in the area. And the west side of the mountains is sort of a Pacific Northwest rainforest. So you get, you know, like that brooding, moody, misty, deep Pacific Northwest forests with all kinds of interesting rivers and canyons. And then the mountains themselves form a rain shadow. And the eastern half of the gorge is actually a high plains desert. And so you'll see barren landscapes with desert mesas and crazy rock formations. And so, you know, between all of these different things, it is an adventurer's wonderland. There, people come out here to go skiing and hiking and mountain climbing and rock climbing and windsurfing and, you know, you name it, whitewater rafting. It really is just this amazing place. And, you know, with my background, you know, I kind of felt like we won the lottery to have the opportunity to live down here and make a livelihood down here. But then we started getting all these reports, and I realized that not only is this incredibly beautiful adventure landscape here, it's populated seemingly by just a whole host of strange, wondrous creatures. And I can tell you that this experience has been just one that's been filled with joy for me. You know, the notion that, you know, we're sort of at ground zero for all these people talking about these just astonishing experiences. It's sort of like, you know, two or three times a week, a new Scooby-Doo mystery walks through our front door. And, you know, we get to chat with people and hear their stories. Oftentimes, we're the first people that they tell. And sometimes people have been carrying these secrets around for decades. And that's really one of the most gratifying parts of this project. Now, when we first started this thing up, I told my employees, I had some very specific instructions. I said, I want every one of you to treat everybody who comes in here with a strange story with the utmost respect. You're going to ask intelligent follow-up questions. You're not going to try to fill their story with what you think they saw. Oftentimes people say, oh, you probably just saw, you know, lights in this. It's probably an airplane or probably this. Nope. Take the data in. And don't try to impose your model of reality on what this person is describing. And so we have gained a reputation as a safe place to tell these stories. And what's really fun about that, I mean, the gorge is an enormous area. There's easily well over 2,000 square miles of land out here, but only 80,000 people. And so probably maybe a dozen little towns in the area. The biggest one's probably got 20,000 people in it. But it's gotten to the point where, you know, after a couple of years, I'm pretty well known in the community. And people will come up to me at the post office or the grocery store, or even when I'm eating at a restaurant and, hey, James, I've got to tell you about this encounter that I had. So it's been just phenomenal. And it really is a very unique place. But your question was, what makes it a paranormal hotspot? You know, we seem to way over index. So Washington State has got the highest number of UFO sightings per capita of any state in the country. And we also have the highest number of Bigfoot sightings. And then the gorge itself is sort of the hotspot of Washington. In fact, so there are two counties on the Washington side that are in the gorge. One is Skamania County. And way back in the 60s, they passed the first law to protect Bigfoot here. And if you shoot Bigfoot in Skamania County, you'll get charged with a felony. They actually updated that law, and the new language says that if you shoot this creature and it's determined to be a humanoid, you will be charged with manslaughter. And so it's been around for a long time. When we got here, it was sort of like we realized that either, you know, everyone that we talked to seemed to know someone who had seen Bigfoot or had seen Bigfoot themselves or UFO or something of that nature. And your question was, well, why do we over-index? Why do we have so many? And it really comes back to the unique geology of the area. So they estimate that the river has been flowing here for up to 20 million years, excuse me. And So just from a perspective of a flowing current, you know, to have something consistent for 20 million years, been here literally longer than the mountains, that's a pretty significant, you know, just passage that goes through there. And you could say, oh, James, you're kind of got a woo-woo sense about that, this mystical river energy you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, in very real ways, the energy of the river is being harnessed. And so there are, I think, 14 hydroelectric dams on the gorge, on the Columbia River. They provide 44% of all the hydroelectric power in the United States. There's enough energy coming out of the dams here to power a city the size of Seattle, and then seven more that same size. And all that power is transmitted through these high-voltage transmission lines, mm-hmm. and they crisscross the area. So that's one of the things that's going on here is this flow of the river and the energy that's being produced by it. Then this really, truly apocalyptic event happened 17 million years ago. A gigantic fissure opened in the earth at the Washington-Idaho border, and enormous volumes of lava, thin, soupy, ropey lava, started just spraying out of this fissure. The geological evidence for this is very, very clear. And that lava filled up some areas of eastern Washington state with 3 miles thick of lava. And then it found the ancient Columbia River Valley, which at that time was just a gentle sloping valley. And it flowed 300 miles all the way to the ocean. And it was a fiery hellscape. These eruptions happened over the course of several million years. Oftentimes they're separated by tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. So much lava came out that if you spread it out evenly over the United States, it would bury the entire United States in 60 feet of lava. So when that lava starts to cool, this is getting to your magnetic anomaly story, the ferric material, the magnetically reactive material in that liquid rock, all orients towards the Earth's magnetic North Pole. Mm-hmm. Wherever the pole is at that time, that's where all that material orients towards it, and then it cools and gets locked in place. Out here, it forms basalt, and so it forms these enormous hexagonal column, sort of like the Giant's Causeway. Mm-hmm. Some of your listeners may be familiar with that really crazy landscape that's got those giant hexagonal stone pillars. And so you've got one layer, and it's magnetically oriented. But of course, the Earth's magnetic North Pole wanders. In the last 100 years, it's wandered 700 miles. And so when that next flow came in, might have been 10,000 years later, the Earth's North Pole is in a new spot. And so when it cools, its magnetic material orients towards that new spot. So each layer in the gorge has got a unique magnetic signature to it. And you know, there are over 300 eruptions. So there are places in the gorge where you can see these layers. It's like stacked up like a layer cake. Each layer has got a unique magnetic signature to it. And that's creates a really interesting, nuanced, complex electromagnetic environment.
It's almost like a natural magnetic coil.
Yeah. And then to make things even more confusing, about 2 to 3 million years ago, the Cascade Mountains started rising up. So there's volcanic pressure from below, and you get these columns of volcanic material pushing upward. And so all those layers then get bent and convoluted. So as confusing as it was before to have all those different magnetic layers, now they're contorted and bent and through these enormous vertical pressures that are coming from deep within the Earth. All right, so clearly there's this complicated thing going on here, a lot of different things. When you look at the government navigation maps of the area, the ones issued by NOAA, there are bright pink letters on them warning your compass readings will be wrong in this area. It's 100% verified scientific fact, right? There's no question about it. You know, when commerce makes note of it, they're serious, right? And then to put the cherry on top of it all, we had the world's greatest flood occur right here in the gorge. So 15,000 years ago, there was this enormous lake that formed in Missoula, Montana, held back by the glaciers. So this is during the Ice Age. The glaciers have come down from Canada, and they're sort of covering northern Washington State and northern Montana. They block this giant lake called the Missoula Lake, and it's the size of several of our Great Lakes combined, all held back by an ice dam, is the theory that they're working with. Then that ice dam catastrophically fails, and enormous volumes of water drain out of this lake in a matter of a week, and it created these floods, and they rolled across eastern Washington State. And as they rolled across Washington State, they're 300 feet deep. It is estimated that this flood was greater than the flow of all rivers on Earth combined times 10. And so times 10, like, it's unheard of. There are these giant ripple waves. There's the channeled scab lands. Any of your listeners who listen to Graham Hancock or Randall Carlson have probably heard about them talk about the Younger Dryas floods. Mm-hmm. Well, that's happening here in our backyard. And then at the eastern edge of the gorge, it gets held back by a place called Wallula Gap. It's like a constriction point. And so it's a narrow passageway where the river goes through. And so then a huge amount of pressure builds up, and that water starts rocketing down the gorge, and it's stripping everything off the landscape, all the trees, all the soil, even the basalt rock itself is getting plucked and picked apart. So the water is traveling at 70 miles an hour, where my store is, it was 800 feet deep. and other parts of the gorge easily 1,000 feet deep, and it is scouring the landscape. And so all of those magnetic layers are then exposed, and they're like a gigantic live wire, right? And so you can imagine, like, normally, if you've got this situation where there's been a lava flow and the magnetic layers are stacked on top of each other, you just walk along the surface and you're only interacting with that top layer. Well, here in the gorge, those layers can be 800 feet, stacked up 800 feet high, and they're all right there present. And so you combine all those factors together and you get this incredibly nuanced and unique electromagnetic environment. There are places where I have explored where compasses don't work, cell phones don't work, you can't get a good lock on a GPS satellite. Like, it is as wild and rugged a wilderness as you can imagine. And then combine on top of that this notion that your compass isn't going to work out here and you may not even get good satellite coverage. It's really phenomenal. And so that sort of lays the groundwork about what a just an astonishingly unique place this is geologically and geomagnetically. Well, the reason why that is interesting is back in the 80s and 90s, there was Dr. Michael Persinger. He was up at Laurentide University in Ontario, Canada. And he was doing studies on what happens when you manipulate magnetic fields around a human brain. He knew that the human brain in critical structures like the hippocampus and the temporal lobes contains magnetite crystals. Mm-hmm. In fact, they found that up to 5 million magnetite crystals per gram of brain matter. And at a basic level, they believe these magnetic crystals account for some creature's ability to navigate, like creatures that migrate over long distances. They believe that there is actually a physical mechanism of a magnetic sense that allows these creatures to, understand where north is and then travel in that direction. But what Persinger found, fascinatingly, is that under certain signals, so certain electromagnetic field signals that are reproducible with other studies and other equipment, it wasn't just him being able to do this, and he was a meticulous scientist, that you could induce perceptions that are very similar to many paranormal reports. So the most common was this sensed presence. So you felt like there was another conscious entity there with you. In fact, a handful of his subjects claimed to have seen God while in this, under the influence of this thing. And so the thing got this nickname in the media as the God helmet. But a whole range of things. He could turn on and off fear, like pressing a button. And so what I find fascinating about that is that he showed without any kind of, without any doubt, that manipulating magnetic fields around a human brain can induce paranormal perceptions, right? Mm-hmm. So really interesting stuff. And where it really clicked for me, so there is a place, it's maybe 4 miles from the store. So just so your listeners can get a sense. So imagine there's a gorgeous 80 miles long. Right about at the midpoint is where it transitioned from rainforest to desert. On the Oregon side, there's a fairly large town called Hood River. A lot of people visit there because it's great windsurfing. It's like the windsurfing capital of the world. It's about an hour east of Portland, Oregon. And then there's a bridge at Hood River called the Hood River Bridge. And my store is on the Washington side. And we're right near that bridge in a little town called Bingen. And so this notion that we are getting all these reports, I think really has something to do with these crazy electromagnetic environment. So like I was saying, about 4 miles from the store, 4 miles west of the store, there's this little spit of land by a salmon hatchery called the Spring Creek Hatchery. And I was taking pictures there one day, and it's a cloudy day, and this strange beam of light came down. And then, so in one picture, there's no beam of light. Then there's this beam of light coming down. In the next picture, there is this incredible glowing blue orb. And so we're fairly certain, we've talked to a number of photographic experts that this is not headlights. You can see cars on the road with headlights. This looks nothing like that. And we're fairly certain it's not a lens flare either. We've had numerous reports of orbs in that area, glowing orbs. But here's one that's actually captured on film. I know it's authentic because I took the picture myself. Well, last year, spring of last year, nearly a year ago, we received a picture in the store, and it seems to show a tic-tac-shaped object above Underwood Mountain, which is directly above where I took the picture of the orb. And this is, looks like the classic tic-tac that you see on the Navy gun cams from the fighter jets. No wings, no rotors. The picture was taken from 12 miles away. Not a lot of data to deal with. But yet we've got a photograph phenomenon at the base of this thing called Underwood Mountain, photograph phenomenon at the summit of Underwood Mountain. Underwood Mountain's about 3,000 feet tall. And then we received a report of someone who actually lives in Underwood Mountain. There are a number of wineries out there. And this gentleman said that he saw two red glowing orbs in the sky above his property. They seemed to be like leapfrogging each other and dancing around each other. They descended, in his report, he says that they descended to ground level. He believes that they turned into a pair of eyes. And then, like a switch was thrown in his brain, he suddenly was overcome with fear, like just mortal peril fear. He was very clear about his description in that it wasn't like the situation had built up for him. Okay, now I'm afraid because the facts that are being presented to me are scary. It's like, no, there was a switch that was thrown and suddenly he was terrified. He ran into his home and he grabbed a shotgun. And by the time he came out, the phenomenon was over. And the thing that really clicked for me was this notion that he experienced fear getting turned on as though it were a switch, which is exactly the type of phenomenon that Persinger was able to replicate in his studies. And so that to me is one of the clues that tells us that we may be dealing with these magnetic fields generated by the unique geology here. And just to be clear, that Underwood Mountain is one of those places where those full, where those layers of different magnetic signatures have been folded and buckled, because Underwood Mountain is a volcanically created mountain. So it's got that pressure from underneath. So it's really fascinating that, you know, there's this cluster of phenomenon. We've had numerous reports on that, that same mountain of other people seeing orbs. Some go back to the 80s. And just a wide range of things like that. So, yeah, my belief, the current operating theory, is that the gorge's unique geomagnetics create these perceptions for people. Now, the most important question you have to ask yourself is, okay, are they hallucinations, right? Is this something which is local to a person's, one person's mind? Their mind is getting influenced. They're experiencing things that are some type of artifact of brain chemistry or brain electromagnetism. And the thing that sort of puts a big X through that theory is that we have photographic evidence. So I took the picture of the orb, and a hallucination is not going to be captured by a camera, just as the tic-tac-shaped UFO, not going to be captured by a camera. People have brought in hair samples of what they claim to be from Sasquatch creatures. So a personal hallucination is not going to leave behind hair samples or footprints or, and the other thing that we have is many co-witnessed events. So my wife and I have seen orbs while driving down Highway 14, which is the main highway on the northern side of the gorge. Numerous people, we've had just a week ago, maybe it was a little over a week ago, a woman came into the store, had a report that her and her friends were lying in a field just a few miles north of the river, watching a meteor shower. And then they saw two lights sort of, they thought they at first were satellites and they were moving across the sky. And to be sure, you know, people have come in, they've seen the Starlink satellites. They think, oh, I've seen something amazing. And we have to inform them about, you know, Starlink often looks like what you're describing. And so I thought, oh, I hope this lady doesn't have another Starlink story. It's no fun when you find out Elon Musk is responsible for your UFO sighting. So, but her story took a turn that I didn't expect. She said that there, her and eight of her friends, so nine people total, were watching these meteor showers, these two lights. They look like satellites. So if your listeners haven't seen this, it basically looks like two little pinpoints, two moving stars across the skyline. Satellites are not dramatic to look at. But then she said. And then a green sheet-like laser came out of them, scanned the tree line at the one end of the field, ran across the whole field that they were in, scanned them, continued across the rest of the field, then up the tree line, and then disappeared. And it originated from these two dots. So this is a co-witnessed event, right? This is a thing where there's eight people experiencing the same thing. And so if you've got that, to me says very unlikely that it's a hallucination, that people are experiencing something that is local to their own brains or some type of anomaly of their own chemistry or electricity going on within them. We've had a group of whitewater rafting guides watched a gigantic egg-shaped UFO for 45 minutes above the White Salmon River out here. And so we have these numerous accounts of co-witnessed events, events with photographic evidence, encounters with physical evidence. And so that leads me to believe that there's those magnetic anomalies are not creating hallucinations. They're not creating something localized to one person's brain. So what's going on there? Like, what can we look at that would help us understand this type of phenomena? So think about a radio signal. So you've got your radio turned on. It is a receiving apparatus, electromagnetic receiving apparatus, and you have it tuned to the classical music station. And your reality that you're experiencing at that moment includes the regular world plus classical music that's coming through this receiver. You make a minor adjustment to that receiver, and suddenly your reality includes rock and roll music or country music or talk radio. Those signals are always present. They were there when you were listening to classical music, but you weren't tuned to be able to receive the rock and roll music. So you were tuned to receive classical music. So that's what you perceived. I think what's going on out here is that there are these multiple realities at these, you know, we can call them frequencies, but I don't have a exact scientific explanation for what's going on here. But so you have your rock and roll station and your classical music station and your country music station. Normally, we're just tuned to channel normal. We're listening to the classical music. That's what we think reality is. But these other realities are existing simultaneously. And out here in the gorge, the unusual electromagnetic environment is adjusting people's tuners, their receiving apparatus, and they're suddenly perceiving things that they don't normally perceive. And that's where we're getting these paranormal reports from.
That is a fantastic theory. I mean, I really like it. I mean, that is like super well thought out and detailed. Oh, thank you. And it makes perfect sense. Like the magnetic anomaly would be triggering something in the brain to allow the person to perceive more than one reality at the same time. That's really.
And think about like what a minor adjustment you make to your radio station, right? It's just a tiny turn of that dial, and you've adjusted the frequency that you can receive, right? Yeah. And so, you know, like I said, it's one of those kind of things where we get in this data, and a lot of times it's a one-off kind of a story, and we start to look for what are the patterns, what are the larger things that we can say about it, you know. Because we have this take all comers, take everyone seriously, we knew from the beginning that we would get people telling tall tales. And I thought to myself, what's the harm in that? You know, I'm running a store. This is a, you know, pet project, curiosity kind of a thing. And so we can't take any one report too seriously. But when we start seeing clusters of reports or similar phenomenon, similar things going on in different locations. Now, what's interesting is that, of course, every time you go to like the field where that woman and her friend saw the sheet laser come down, you don't see the sheet laser, right? Mm-hmm. So what's going on with that? And I think that there may be other factors that influence that tuning. So you've got solar weather, which will impact our magnetosphere and can make dramatic changes to the Earth's magnetic field, which is combined with what's going on over here. Also, this place is geologically active. We have landslides every year. Our snow plows perform double duty for removing rocks that fall into the road. Like we have, you know, rock slides frequently out here. And so there's a great deal of tectonic strain and stress going on. One of the extra factors that makes this place geologically unique is that the Pacific Northwest, as like a whole, has been rotating clockwise for a couple of million years. It's this slow rotation, and it's like a couple of centimeters a year, but it's all just twisting, and it's created these gigantic folds called the Yakima folds and everything like that. But the point is that the geomagnetic conditions out here are constantly changing, whether it be tectonic stress, solar weather. I think there may even be impacts about what's going on in your personal body chemistry. Mm-hmm. It may be that, you know, if you've eaten bananas and you've got more potassium in your system, that may be affecting, you know, the whole, what you're tuned to perceive. You know, interestingly, so Persinger is able to induce these perceptions, which we would call paranormal perceptions. But there are other plant hallucinogens, ayahuasca and psilocybin, these kind of things, which also seem to create these experiences which are not a part of the normal channel of reality that we perceive. And what's interesting, because they can, in a controlled scientific environment, see what happens to a person's brain activity when they're on these different substances, you would think that if they're hallucinating, that brain activity would spike, right? Like if you're creating a whole world or you're creating these things, brain activity has to go up because it is manufacturing these perceptions. But in fact, what happens is brain activity decreases when you're on the most hallucinogenic substances. That seems to indicate is that we're talking about a phenomenon where you are not manufacturing your perceptions, but your brain is quieting to the point where it's perceiving things it normally doesn't. And so again, I'm not a scientist. I just have been lucky enough to be in a place and, you know, built the trust of a community that we receive this just huge smorgasbord of unusual experiences and reports. And the things that we hear about are just truly wondrous and amazing, really out of this world. And in some ways, you know, those of us who have been in the paranormal community for any amount of time recognize that, you know, science kind of looks down their nose at this stuff and doesn't give it any stock. And so people get frustrated that, oh, we're not legitimized by science. I think that's awesome. Like, to me, this is a golden age of exploration. Like, you think about, like, back in the Victorian era, there are gentlemen, citizen scientists who are finding fossils and coming up with theories about dinosaurs. You've got a guy like Ben Franklin. So think about, like, in the 1750s, electricity is a completely unknown, mystical, sorcerous form of energy, right? No one really knows what's going on with it. And Ben Franklin, like a total freak, is out in his yard flying a kite in a lightning storm trying to figure out what electricity is. And so you have this incredibly intelligent, wildly curious people trying to understand the phenomenon that's going on all around them. And it's a golden age for citizen scientists. And I think luckily for us, we're at a point where science, because they've got a paradigm of a material world where materialism, you know, particles banging against each other is the foundation of all reality. And anything that doesn't fit within that, they dismiss as unreal. Well, good for them, because that leaves folks like us where we don't have to worry about academic reputations or our getting our funding or any of these other kind of things. We can explore these things and really sort of be at the forefront. If you think about the way science works, science is always the last to know. The way that it works is you get field reports and then scientists have to check it out and then they have to debate amongst each other and then they have to overcome all of the social pressures of going against the grain. And eventually, you know, the biggest voices in the scientific community have to die off before they're willing to accept a new paradigm. So for something to get into, you know, the scientific community's radar screen as being legitimized, like, they're at the trailing indicator. They're nowhere near being a leading indicator. Mm. And to me, it's really cool that folks like you and I can, you know, investigate this stuff and have this clear field unfettered by you know, any kind of academic structures that are going to tell us that we can't do cool stuff.
Absolutely. I do think that science is coming around, though. You know, I mean, science cannot dispute the fact that matter doesn't actually exist, that all it is energy. It's waves, and it's waves until it's observed, and then it becomes particles. And it can't really, you know, that's what they're kind of stuck on now.
Yeah.
And then they have, you know, I don't know, thousands of years of information and stories of anomalous things happening. And
you're so right about
mystics,
that.
Religion people, paranormal people, occultists, all different types, you know. And now you actually sort of have this emerging now of all of that coming together into one sort of new model of reality in a lot of ways, I think.
I love it. You know, and you're so right. Like, the earliest records of human thought are cave paintings. You know, you talk about like Lascaux, France. These are images that are 40,000 years old. And consistently, on every continent where human beings have lived, you see beings that are impossible. So you see therianthropes, which are human-animal hybrids. You see chimeras, which are combination creatures. You see things depicted in this art that is physically impossible by the laws of nature as we currently understand them. But yet, there it is, a part of the human experience from the beginning, you know? And so, like, you see these folks who cross their arms and say, it's all bunk. It's like, what are you talking about? When you look at, like, every culture, every continent, they're talking about this kind of stuff throughout time. Doesn't matter where in the world you are. And oftentimes it's the best and the brightest. It's the shaman. These are the medicine people of the communities. You know, they're the ones who are the out of the box thinkers. It's the pharaohs. It's Ben Franklin. You know, it's those guys who are willing to entertain the idea, to look at the data, the field data, and say, okay, well, what are we hearing here? And so what I have discovered, you know, I've given a lot of talks and, you know, talked to a lot of folks about this. There's the super bright, really smart folks, the most intellectually curious. They keep paranormal on the table. They want to know what's going on with it. They're curious about it. And then you get the rabble, like me, you know, who don't have advanced degrees, but we have an intuitive sense that there's something more to the world. And there's really just a very thin band of folks who staunchly disbelieve in the paranormal. There's really not that many of them. And they're mostly just mediocre minds. They're not particularly brilliant people. And they've just, you know, they've just bought into the paradigm, and they've decided that, you know, these things aren't real, and despite whatever evidence you may present. In fact, they won't even look at the evidence. They don't even have the intellectual curiosity to go deeper into the phenomenon. And so, you know, I've thought about that. Like, what is going on, and do I care? And, you know, how can you convince these people? Should you worry about it? You know, and, you know, I think that, like, it's a defense mechanism. And we often hear folks wanting to normalize a situation. Like, when you talk to someone like, oh, we saw a gigantic black cat, it's like, they'll chuckle and like, oh, okay, it was probably, you know, something else. Maybe it was a dog, or maybe it wasn't as big as you say it was, or whatever. And there's a really strong need to normalize things. And, you know, we can get into some of the stories about how silly that becomes. But these people who are normalizing are, they're defending their world map. You know, so like, as you go through life, you kind of try to figure out how the world works. You think you got a pretty good handle on it, and then someone shows up and starts talking about giant black cats or UFOs or Bigfoot, and it doesn't fit into your world map. And you're like, ah, well, I'm just going to disregard the data because it's a lot of work. I got enough problems without worrying about this kind of stuff. So you can't blame them. And I don't want to, you know, deprive anyone of their psychological comfort. But they shouldn't be attacking folks. You know, if you can defend your own worldview, but you don't need to attack somebody who has a different worldview.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So the first report we got of the safecat, just to give an illustration of this, this guy who was a friend of my mother-in-law came into the store, took him 45 minutes to work up the courage to tell the story to me, described encountering, he was orienteering, map and compass work, 3 miles west of the store, a place called Buck Creek area. And his compass started acting strange. In and of itself, not enough for me to get excited because compasses don't work here anyway. And he looked up across the creek and he saw this enormous black cat creature. It had a long black fur. It was sitting there looking at him, and it was unafraid of him. And so as a, you know, search and rescue EMT and, you know, a soldier and a firefighter, I've encountered a lot of animals. I know what's going on. And so right there, a couple of flags went up for me. So of course we have cougars out here. But cougars are never black. Cougar would be normally like a tawny, tannish color. When they express their melanin, when their fur gets dark, it moves more towards a red color. But all of the wildlife experts that we talk to say, yep, there's no such thing as a black cougar, not recognized by science. The only big black cats in North America are jaguars, but their range is 1,000 miles south of here, like in southern Arizona and New Mexico, that area. So we've got a black cat. That's an anomaly. It's not afraid of humans. Another big anomaly. A cougar will abandon a fresh kill at the sound of human voices, let alone seeing a human. For one to stand there and stare you in the eye, that's a strange thing. And then its size, 4 to 5 feet tall at the shoulder. So normally a really big cougar is 24 inches at the shoulder. A tiger, biggest cat known to be alive today, is maybe 36 inches. But we're talking about something that's, you know, 40 or 50 inches tall at the shoulder. Gigantic creature. And it's supported by a number of other reports. A guy was driving down from Mount St. Helens not very long ago. This report came in 3 weeks ago. And the cat jumped into the middle of the road, basically landed on the double yellow line, looked at him, and then jumped over the guardrail and down a hill. He said that the car that he saw was as tall as his Honda Civic. And so that's about, you know, 4.5 feet tall car. We've had other folks describe its enormous size, fairly credible folks. So point is, he's telling me this story. I'm listening. I'm like, okay, there's something unusual going on here. And then at the end, he said, and you know, James, the strangest thing is that it had a face that looked like a monkey. It had intelligent ape-like eyes. And, you know, he described some other features, which I always kind of keep to myself so that I have something to check other stories against, right? And it was completely remarkable. I'd never heard anything like that before. And so I was pretty excited. Again, one data point, can't do too much with it. It could be reporting error, could be the guys making it up. We don't know. But still, interesting tale. Because he was a friend of my mother-in-law, kind of a friend of the family, my mother-in-law had helped his family out with some medical things that they were going through. She was a highly accomplished pharmacist. I marked him down as credible. There's ways that you can tell when people tell a story, if they're making it up or, you know, they're kind of, they seem genuine. But again, you know, we can't be sure. So the next day I was talking to my staff about it, and one of my staff members, Missy, she started shaking. Like she was emotionally impacted as I described this creature. And I said, well, what's wrong? What's going on? And you have to understand, Missy is one of the very honest person. She doesn't even like to play practical jokes on her coworkers because that's kind of like lying. And that's like not her thing. So, so the fact that she was, you know, emotionally engaged by this description was curious. And she said, James, I have seen that thing myself. I was driving down Klickitat Canyon. So this is one Klickitat River is fed by the Klickitat Glacier on Mount Adams. It's a beautiful canyon, maybe 10 minutes east of our store. And it was at dawn, and she saw this enormous black cat with a long black tail. She didn't get a look at its face, but she actually was so stunned by it that she stopped her car and watched it. She said it walked into a small patch of tall grass and then it seemed to vanish. Never saw it again. She wondered if she should tell the people who live nearby. There's a few scattered houses. She thought, oh, they'll just think I'm crazy. When she did tell her family, they did think she was crazy. They laughed at her. And they told her that she had probably seen a cow. All right. So this is a grown woman And they're saying, you don't know the difference between a cow and a cat. Pretty crazy. And what's interesting about that, though, is the creature that she described seeing was as big as a cow. Like, that was the analog. It wasn't like they said, oh, you probably saw a dog. You saw an animal. The cow's about 4 feet tall at the shoulder. And it's interesting. It's sort of like if you were sitting around your hometown and you saw a red Lamborghini drive by and you told your friends and they all said, red Lamborghinis are super rare. I'm not even sure they exist. What you probably saw was a red minivan. Like, it's just ridiculous on its face a lot. And that's what that normalization process does, is people want to make it something that they know, something that's common, something that's easy and obvious and interesting or not anomalous. And so for me, we had two reports from what I considered highly credible. And again, this is me, so I can make that call. And we have an advertising budget with the store. And so I put up radio ads. Has anyone else seen a big black cat? And we put up signs at the trailheads. And lo and behold, the reports started flooding in. And many people didn't know that there was no such thing as black cougars. And so they thought it was just a black cougar and nothing anomalous. A lot of people encounter is not very exciting. Like, I was driving my ATV and this giant black cat jumped across the trail and scared the crap out of me, and I never saw it again. We've had senior law enforcement officials say that they've seen it. We had one guy said that he saw it in his driveway and it had a kit with it. So a youngling, a baby. And the reports go back to 1968 is the earliest report that we have. And there have been no hostile encounters. It seems completely unafraid of humans. And, as I dive into this and try to figure out what's going on, there is only one creature in the fossil record that matches a creature this size. It's back during the Ice Age. There was a creature called the Panthera atrox. It was an American lion. And it was a creature that was over 1,000 pounds, as tall as the creature we're talking about. And it had, interestingly, the largest brain pan of any cat that had ever lived. And, you know, so as I'm taking these reports, like, I go back and forth between, you know, like, you get a report, someone says it looks like a monkey face, and you're like, well, I don't know what that means. It might just be an anomalous piece of data. Maybe they didn't get a good look at it. And I'll just go to sort of thinking, oh, maybe it's just some kind of big mutant cougar. And then we'll get another report. And there was a fire, like a wildland fire chief, crew chief. And they got deployed in the wilderness area between Mount Adams and Mount St. Helens. And the whole crew saw this cat with a monkey-like face on their first day of a 3-day deployment. And they wondered what the hell they were going to do if it showed up in their camp. And her description was a little more helpful. She said that it had a flattened face. So think about the difference between like a German Shepherd and a pug dog. Mm-hmm. Both dogs, one's got a more flattened face. You could argue that that flattened face looks more human than a long snouty face. Again, I don't know. Deeper into the research, we hear about a Native American tradition of a race of supernatural panther protectors. They come from the underwater realm. So when Native Americans talk about things coming from the sky realm, the earth realm, or the underwater realm, they're talking about a being that seems to have one foot in our physical world, one foot in the spirit world. They're called the Meshepeshu. And one description that I read is that it looks like a black panther with the face of a man. And fascinating coincidence, here in the gorge, especially in the desert side, there are a lot of petroglyphs. So the Native American have carved images into the rocks. And one of them, at an area called Horse Thief Lake, looks like a cat-like creature. It's kind of got crazy eyes, and there are wavy water lines under its head. And so this may be, you know, some nod to this type of creature living here for, you know, perhaps millennia. Who knows how long it's been here and been encountered by the people of this area. Before we started our reporting program in the store, I was sitting in there's like this desert mesa. So imagine, you know, it's got the steep sides and the flat top. It's called Horse Thief Butte. It's right near Horse Thief Lake. It's like a normal desert mesa, but when you get close to it, it is riddled with a labyrinth of hidden passageways and like natural amphitheaters. And the Native Americans absolutely did vision quests in this location. So I was out there at dusk, and that was a summer evening in June. And I was looking across the lake. So it was like I was in the butte looking across a sort of an open area down into a lake, which is probably 200 feet below me. And then right across is where the petroglyphs are. And I saw a creature swimming in the lake. And it would sort of patrol the center lake, so swimming in circles. It was dark in color. There were ducks, you know, waterfowl on the surface, so I could kind of gauge its size. It seemed to be bigger than a person, but smaller than a car, so somewhere in that range. It was dark in color. It would submerge for a period of time, up to 5 minutes, then resurface. And I was probably 700 yards away. And so I really couldn't make out any details. I didn't have binoculars with me. And I racked my brain trying to figure out what in the heck I was looking at. There are a few creatures in the area that might be big enough for me to have thought that's what it was. We've got black bear out here. Rarely get above 300 pounds, but they're swimmers. But they're typically point-to-point swimmers. They wouldn't patrol the center of a lake, and they certainly wouldn't submerge for, you know, 5 minutes at a time. We had elk out here. Again, they're probably big enough to be that size. They're over 1,000 pounds. But they'll swim, but they're point-to-point swimmers, certainly not submerging swimmers. We have sturgeon out here, giant fish. Some of them can grow to be 12 feet long, but they don't hang out on the surface. They're lighter in color. So at the time, I just chalked it up as, I don't know what this thing is, but it's unlike any creature that lives out here in the Columbia River Gorge that I'm aware of. And then later we started getting these reports, and as I put it together, I realized that this may be what I was observing. So yeah, that's pretty remarkable. You know, there's this notion that it may have some type of paranormal roots, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, there's a really good case to be made that it escaped from the Department of Energy Hanford Nuclear Labs.
Right. You can never forget that, you know, there's probably multiple things causing multiple. You know, one could actually be a mutation from the plant. Others could be people's perceptions. Others could be beings coming through a portal towards us. So all those possibilities are probably at play, I would imagine.
You know, when you think back to that radio analogy, it's easy for us to imagine our tuners getting switched and we can perceive things that we normally don't perceive. But if these beings have an independent reality to them, they may also have their receivers switched. And when they're in the gorge, they can see us. You know, like it can be a sort of a two-way kind of a thing. Fascinating stuff. You know, we have had, so of course, you know, we get a lot of Sasquatch reports. We get a lot of these ape cat reports, a lot of UFO reports. But we also get a ton of like one-off cryptids. And this, to me, is one of the most interesting phenomena. And so you've heard of like a chupacabra, a dogman, some of these, I call them big brand cryptids that everybody knows about. And there's multiple reports on them. But just this week, we got a report of a woman who saw a white, shaggy creature. She was a child at the time, driving in the back of her parents' car. It was an SUV. Up in the mountains on a dirt road. And this white-furred creature charged the car and then ran alongside of it. And she said, as she looked at it, she could not see a discernible head to it. Like it was just like this quadrupedal creature that didn't seem to have a neck or head. And it ran alongside of her car at a remarkable speed, then sort of deked off into the woods. Another young girl, actually my daughter, we were out 4x4ing, not far from our house, and we pulled off to let another car pass. And she looked out the window and said, oh, there's a big snake out there, Dad. And she described this snake that was about 4 feet long, brownish in color, and it had red frills on the side of its head. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And I looked at my wife, and I looked back at her, and we had my daughter describe this thing, and we had her draw pictures of it. She was convinced that she had just seen a normal animal, but there are no frilled snakes in North America or in the world, and there are no frilled lizards in North America. So what she saw, we don't know. Other reports of hairless dog-like creatures whistling, like a pack of them, terrified a family camping. And these creatures seemed to be as large as Great Danes, but they were definitely not dogs. There's something else that kind of looked like dogs that could whistle. And they were frightened away by the rising sun. So we have like all of these incredible one-off stories that don't seem to fit any kind of the classic cryptids that we hear about. And it makes me wonder if this area isn't some type of crossroads where things pass through. Anyway, it's a fascinating thing, and I'm not quite sure what to make of it, but it is to me intensely interesting.
It sure is. This is a great interview, so I want to thank you for coming on. But before we wrap it up, though, how is the best way for my listeners to find you and your store and what you have to offer up there?
Sure. So my store is in Bingen, Washington, B-I-N-G-E-N, Washington. We're right across the river from Hood River, Oregon, about an hour east of Portland, Oregon. You can go to margiesoutdoorstore.com. And we've got our paranormal reporting forms are up there. We've also got some images of some of the creatures that folks have seen. The best way to stay current with our sightings and things of that nature is to go to our Facebook page. And that's Marge's Outdoor Store on Facebook. I think we've got an Instagram page too. And we've got a couple of videos up on YouTube. We're trying to get better with all that kind of stuff. And, it's interesting. I just, after a couple of years of doing this, I finally said, okay, well, is there any interest in a Gorge Paranormal group? So we had our first meeting last Saturday and 50 people showed up.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
I think that's interest.
Yeah. And so we're going to start doing regular meetings with the Gorge Paranormal group. And the problem is that we get so many reports that it's hard for me to keep up with, maintaining the data and, getting it out to folks. And so hopefully this group will be able to help me sort of communicate out a lot more of the information we've been receiving.
Awesome. I'll put the links up in the notes of this episode so my listeners can come up, check you out and maybe come up there, visit your store, and maybe have a paranormal experience of their own.
Well, we'd love to see them.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. And I actually don't have an outro, so we just sort of stop recording. So give me 1 second.
Recording stopped.